Dr. Nashley Brogan. Welcome to the Hear Us Out podcast. Thank you so much for joining us today. We look forward to hearing your story. Why don't we start there? Why don't you tell us a little bit about your journey with hearing loss and your journey as an audiologist?
Thank you for having me. I'm super excited to share my story. It actually started when I developed hearing loss myself. I was in my teens and I started having difficulty hearing, but nobody else really noticed. It was actually, I was in high school getting my driver's license and couldn't hear people in the backseat of the car. I'd had a hearing test a few years earlier and they said, you know, I have some hearing loss, but later on, but nothing was done at that point. But then I was struggling more and more. I was involved in a lot of activities, but I kind of slid under the radar and nobody really picked up because I still did okay. Years went by. And then when I was 18, I went to see a different audiologist, who was phenomenal. She was my mentor who encouraged me to become an audiologist, and she fed me with hearing aids a month before I left to live in France for the year.
What were your first hearing aids?
They were the Phonak Picoforts. So they were BTE.
Before my time.
A long time ago.
Might be entirely before your time.
It was pretty exciting. This summer, I was actually at the Phonak Sphere for their launch, and it was 20 years to the week when I was fit with my Phonak Picoforts. So 20 years advancements in technology and me getting new sets every 4 years and seeing that transformation. So it was a pretty amazing experience.
That's awesome.
You said that you've had either a series or at least a time where you had said that the audiologist went along with that you were doing okay. What did this audiologist either do or say to shift it over to this is something you need?
Because she told me at the time, she was very direct. She was like, you know, you need to do this. You need to take action. You take care of your hearing. Your hearing is going to change over time. And we got to keep stimulating your auditory system. We got to stimulate your brain so you're processing sound. So she was a very strong audiologist in terms of making sure I was doing the best to take care of my hearing health. I think I always say she was 20 years ahead of her time. The things that we talk about today in hearing health and brain health, she did that in 1994 for me.
So she was making a compelling argument for you to address this now versus wait.
That wasn't really a choice, right? She was being the medical professional. She gave the recommendation to my parents. I was instantly fit with hearing aids, and she started that journey of taking care of my hearing. Every time I would come back from university, I was seeing her, an annual assessment, newer technology every few years, recommended an FM system, everything I needed, including counseling, to make sure that I was taking care of my hearing health and getting the proper stimulation that I needed at the time.
As a teenager, were you receptive at the time to getting hearing aids?
It was interesting. So when I saw Odelia at the age of 18 and she told me to get them, I just did start wearing them. So which is interesting is I started wearing them and had no questions. They're behind the ear hearing aids with the big full shell ear mold at the time. And I just wore them. But what happened was, is as I wore hearing aids, I was living in France at that time. It was other people's reactions to me where I started to develop anxiety about it. And I started to worry about, because I know people would start signing to me, but I had grown up speaking, understood language, played a few musical instruments. So I didn't know how to react to that. The people were treating me differently because they would see my devices. So what happened over time is wearing my hearing aids is that I became more self-conscious due to other people's reactions. But me, myself, when I first got them, I just wore them.
Now, when you were first diagnosed, did they look for an underlying medical cause of the hearing loss? Was there an investigation that was done to establish that?
No, I mean, the first audiologist I saw years before that, you know, they didn't really say anything. The first ear, nose, and throat specialist I saw said, he told my parents she destroyed her ears listening to music, noise, which wasn't the case. My mother's brother also had a severe, profound, progressive hearing loss that was late onset. Years later, of course, I got his test results and he later got a cochlear implant like me. But by the time I got hearing aids, nobody really said it. But in where I lived at that time, in certain pockets, there's recessive genes that float around with late onset, progressive sensorineural hearing losses, those losses that they just had those high frequencies drop off. So they lose a sharpness every few years and they kind of change. So I was living in an area where you would see more of that. And so obviously my mother's brother and then my youngest sister end up having the exact same hearing loss as me. And she ended up getting fit with hearing aids also when she was in her early 20s.
And where you grew up, was there a screening protocol for hearing loss? Although those ski slope losses can oftentimes get missed by some of the screenings that are implemented.
There was none, but my sister. So when I was first tested, when I was 14, my sister was 7 and she only was at 25 decibels at 8,000 then.
Okay.
Her hearing loss from the age of 7 to 14 would exactly, by 14, she would have mine, then by 18, 20. So if we look at her as an example, because she followed, like in her 20s and 30s, we had the exact same progression and loss, mm-hmm. and she never cochlear implants. So if we were to look at that, and my uncle did, we can probably guess even from my speech that I was born with normal hearing. And a lot of these recessive progressive hearing losses, I've had a few patients myself where I live now, they usually start more in the teen years, because it's post-lingual, so you develop speech and language. So I don't think it's enough that the infant hearing screening would have picked up.
So one thing that stands out to me that you and your sister both having this experience with hearing loss, a couple months back, we had a conversation with Abigail Herringer, who was on The Bachelor, and she wrote a book. It's called The Deaf Girl. And in her book, she wrote about how she and her sister had different relationships with hearing. They both were implanted, but it was a very different story for each of them. Now, for you and your sister, did you follow similar paths? Was it ever a point of tension for the two of you? Was it something that allowed you two to relate better? What was hearing loss in the context of your relationship with your sister?
So I have three sisters. I'm the oldest of four girls, and she's the baby. So there's two in normal hearing. She followed a very different journey with her hearing, and to this day she does. So I never publicly talk about her hearing loss a lot. That's not something that I chose to become a hearing professional and want to talk openly about my journey and working with patients. That's not something she chose to do yet. Hopefully she will in the future. But she did receive cochlear implants like me and go through it. And we have the same experiences, like being amplified and getting cochlear implants. It's just that she just chose not to choose a profession in it. Where for me, because I'm an audiologist and I opened up a hearing clinic right away, my whole life has been audiology, both personally and professionally. And owning a practice for 20 years. So for her, she's like most of my patients. She has a hearing loss. She's treated her hearing loss, but it's not who she is. Where for me, it's part of my identity.
Common question that we get is, if you have hearing loss, can you be an audiologist? Now, of course, the answer is yes, but tell us more about it so that people can get a more detailed answer to that question. What is it like being an audiologist, having hearing loss? Does it get in the way ever, whether it's in the recommendations you make or even just the testing itself, for you to be hearing what people are saying?
Very common question. I've had across North America, actually, people in programs reach out to me who are in the graduate programs, because they get to an audiology program, they get in the clinical training, they start struggling when they start being graded on their testing. And for me at the time, there wasn't a whole lot of support, and I don't think the professors really understood what to do with me. Now I can look at it as 20 years later as an audiologist and say, it doesn't get in the way. It's just that you have to do things differently. And the biggest problem is that when you're graded on your ability to understand speech scores, that's the biggest trouble, or listen to a hearing aid through, like, do a listening check, right? That was probably the two biggest areas that I think most audiologists would struggle in, is like, you know, trying to listen to somebody else's hearing aid. What we did and what I did, obviously, is you can have a million other ways to score word recognition. You can do a computer it now, just make apps and phones can do it now for me. Back then, we just had people point to pictures. I also used audiology assistants when I was testing. And with listening to hearing aids, again, I would have an audiologist or front desk listen, but then we were also running ANSI's and real ears. So we were doing other measures to make sure the hearing aids were working properly. What I always tell people who have a hearing loss who are thinking about it, it's kind of double-sided, because you're going to have superpowers in counseling that most people probably don't have. Because I connect with the patients on a level, I feel like patients tell me stuff that they don't tell other audiologists. I've asked my friends or colleagues, and they just tell me stuff because they feel more comfortable telling me. But I always have to never use my journey or my story to manipulate them or change their journey. So you have to be a very self-aware, if you have a hearing loss, that my experience is not my patient's experience. And when I started speaking publicly like this on podcasts about hearing loss and on stages, I had to be really careful never to project that my journey is going to be identical to somebody else's, because we all have our own unique story, our family life, how we're raised, even our own all different mental health and how we think about learning. So I think that when an audiologist has a hearing loss, they have superpowers that they can use. They really go with counseling, connecting maybe with FM systems and technology and what it's like to go through school with a hearing loss. But then they also have to be careful not to think that everybody's going to be in the same boat as them.
Have you found it ever to be a challenge if you have a patient and you're trying to understand their case, and then you're making a recommendation or counseling based on what their experience is, and if they make choices that deviate significantly from what you would recommend, is it a challenge to recognize, wait a second, different story, different journey, different patient, it's not me? I mean, I'm thinking from my own biases in working with patients, if you feel like the recommendation you're making is so clear and the choice is so clear and they don't go with it, why does your experience seem to influence how you interact with that patient who chooses not to seek what you're offering?
I think because I'm very self-aware, I have been since the get-go, that like my journey is different than theirs. But then again, I did not want to wear an FM system and my audiologist recommended it. I went through years where I cut all my hearing off and showed them, and I went through years where I covered my hearing. So I think I've gone through every emotion to do with my hearing loss in the last 20 years. Even at the end, the last 10 years before I got cochlear implants, I hadn't talked on the telephone in 10 years, and I had, my speech was all slurred. Like, it was very different. If you had heard me in 2013, I did not sound anything like I do today. So I went through a lot of different emotions and feelings. So I think I always understood that a person was kind of like angry or upset, or they weren't ready yet. And my job was always to nurture them. So I think like I was kind of like, okay, they're not ready yet. We're going to nurture them. And it still happens every day in this clinic here. I mean, we have people come in every day who we recommend treatment for hearing or tinnitus, and they turn around not to. We've had children's parents who've said, I don't want to do that for them. And we've had lots of patients who we've recommended cochlear implants for, and they're like, we don't want to go to a hospital or surgery. So for me, that's just a sign that they need more education and time to process it. But I kind of had to go through the same thing in my family. My mother went through a lot of denial when I got diagnosed because she blamed her family. She kind of blamed herself. So I'm very aware that it can be a very, my mom wasn't the person who became like the mom who was a helicopter parent. She actually did the opposite. She actually went inwards and didn't want to talk about my hearing loss. Mm-hmm. So I did that. So I tend to be very careful when people find it difficult in the beginning to accept.
I don't know if the word you said was denial, but or the hardship of handling your hearing loss. Was that the same kind of emotion for her when your sister was diagnosed with it? Did it strengthen? Did it become more accepting for her once she had time to digest it with you?
It did. I think so. When I got tested, because I was the oldest of four, and then her brother had it, they tested all of us at the same time, right? All four children. And then when I got again at 18, they wanted to test everybody again. She just always felt bad. She's like, oh, it's, you know, on my side of the family, I did this to my daughters. And she was worried about her future because it was a progressive hearing loss. I mean, my hearing changed very rapidly in those 10 or 15 year period. And she was worried about our future. So when you've seen a parent go almost into self-blame and denial, and when you see it every day in clinic, you have a lot of sympathy, you get a lot of empathy and compassion for those people, because you understand that they're coming to terms with the fact. The biggest fear is like, are they going to still be able to have a successful future? Are they still going to be able to do their dreams? Is this going to impact her ability to go to university? And I think you see the same thing with our middle-aged adults and our older-age adults. They're worried about how it might impact their future.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
So my mother, she's definitely now, she's fine, but it was definitely a journey for her for years, just like it was for us.
Because I think it's important for people listening to recognize that when we're talking about devices for hearing, whether it's hearing aids, cochlear implants, any other assistive devices, that they're not correcting the underlying hearing loss. They're assisting the user to hear better, but it's a lot of work on the part of the user to be able to communicate more effectively. So if you could talk about that and what that experience has been for you and what sort of work you needed to do to be able to hear better.
The years leading up to cochlear implant, I was very aware of my speech because it was taking more effort to talk and to listen all the time, because at the end I was using FM systems, but my ability to understand speech would be less than 20%, maybe I think it was 14% in both ears by the time I had a cochlear implant. So very, very poor ability to understand speech. I was a phenomenal lip reader, but that was exhausting. But then I couldn't hear my own voice. So once I had my cochlear implants activated and I could hear, then I started listening aggressively. So I turned the closed captions off on the television. I would spend hours per day listening with one ear, listening with the other ear, trying to listen to the radio station, listening to podcasts. I still to this day spend an hour every day under headphones listening to podcasts and sounds with no visual cues. And 10 years later, to constantly be working on my brain to be able to understand without speech cues. So I've always worked, I did auditory training programs. I was working on that, why I was also careful with how I was enunciating and talking and making sure that I was basically being a part of my communication. Because I think even as you have a hearing loss and things get easier, you got to work on your enunciation and slowing down when you're talking or sometimes speeding up. based on what your habits been. So I feel like my identity changed. I went from a hearing loss identity to almost like a deaf identity to a cochlear implant identity, which I think is different. I think having a cochlear implant is a very different life than having a hearing aid.
Tell us about those differences as you perceive them, because I think a lot of the world beyond audiology and beyond those with direct experience don't understand that there are really communities involved with this, and that those communities have very different perspectives on what hearing loss is and what the different options one may want to pursue are.
Speaking to people who were born with normal hearing, obviously, so they've always been a part of a human caring community, and then they had like acquired hearing loss or a late onset hearing loss. You know, you have a hearing loss, and then, but not everybody identifies with the hearing aid or deaf community when they've been born with normal hearing and been part of the hearing community. So a lot of times it's like more or less, I wear hearing aids, so you wear hearing aids, but they might not like identify with the people who are really strong advocates with it. And I didn't for many years, so I can understand why people feel that way. But then as you lose more and more and more of your hearing and you're relying on things like closed captioning and tools, you start to identify more with different groups. And the decision to get a cochlear implant for me was easy because I obviously wanted to hear, but obviously I've had patients in my own practice who are deaf and their children, and for them, their identity might be sign language, or they don't want to be a part of the cochlear implant community, which I think is a growing community today of people who wear cochlear implants, which is very different than hearing aids, because when we take them off, we're deaf again. Like if I take my two implants off right now, I'm 100% deaf. It's almost like you're wearing different hats as you go through that journey. And some people choose to, and some people don't. I feel like what I'm seeing now in the labels we use are changing, because audiology traditionally in our societies in the 1920s and 30s and 40s, we would use different labels like impaired or hard of hearing. But what we're seeing in 2025 with inclusivity and the things is some people don't want to be labeled. It's just, I'm a person with a hearing loss, mm-hmm. where other people want to belong to a group. And I think it's just the reason why you want to do it. It's very individual what a person wants to call themselves today. So as an audiologist, I'm very careful not labeling any of my patients. That's their choice, what group they want to belong to, whether it's like a hard of hearing, little D group, big D group, you know, it's their choice. I don't apply labels to them.
Circling back to when you had said that you put in work to this day to listen to podcasts under headphones, you still put in the time to do your auditory training. I think it's important for people to hear, because there is sometimes the misconception or expectation that it is solely on the audiologist to get the listener to have better hearing. And it's us and the cochlear software or the advanced bionic software or the MedEl software. And if we're not manipulating it correctly, they're not going to hear well. But there's a lot of time and effort and work put on the patients as well to get themselves to where they want to be. People who don't show up for follow-up, people who don't take the time to listen solely on auditory stimuli, whether it's podcasts or TV or audiobooks, hearing that people years down the road who are successful that are still putting in this work is good for the people to hear.
100%. I think that, I mean, even for us with all our patients we see, I'm always saying that you gotta flex your brain muscles. You got to learn good communication skills. You got to learn how to be an active listener yourself. So we talk about active listening and always trying to teach the family members of the person with the hearing loss to be a good listener and communicator. But the person with the hearing aids or cochlear implants, they also have to work on their communication skills, and they also have to be mindful of, are they actively listening? Are they slowing down and being intentional in how they're going to listen today? Did I get enough sleep going into a noisy place so that I can process the sound in the background? And I talk a lot about that in our clinic and when I do talks, because I feel like we never give it back to the person who has a hearing loss. I think it's like going to physiotherapy. If you have knee surgery, you're going to go through like a 12-week program, and then you're going to be going for physio, and you kind of keep moving and walking and tracking your steps for a year or two. But we don't talk about that a lot in hearing aids. We think the hearing aid or cochlear implant can solve the problem, where our best patients and the successful superstars are the people who put the work in. I think anybody in clinic usually sees that.
That's actually one of my favorite analogies with patients, is the surgeon can do a perfect job. Your audiologist can manipulate the software perfectly. But if you don't go to your rehab, which is listening and pushing yourself when it comes to listening, your outcome is going to be compromised. It's not going to be as good as it otherwise could be. And it's important to recognize that as wearer of these devices, there's a lot of work you need to do along with us working with you to help you get that good outcome. For some people, it's easier than others, but it's not always easy. And in your case, did you do both ears together or were they done sequentially? How were you implanted?
I was in the Medel cochlear implant study. It was just by accident. So I got the call saying, well, we're going to do one implant. I'm in Canada now, so it's different than the United States, but we're going to do one implant. And they get a call a week later saying, would you be in the Medel study? We're going to do one implant. You're going to go through a series of tests. We're going to do one ear. And then a year later, we're going to do the other ear. And you're going to have all this testing done pre and post. Mm-hmm. So I was in that study where they did so 1 year and then a year later, the other ear.
How was your second ear for you? Because we have a lot of CI patients at our facility. And we find that for some patients, that second ear can be more of a challenge to acclimate to and get used to because there's now this basis of comparison of what it could be. How was that for you?
I knew that going into it. First of all, when I got my first one, it was really, really hard to even wear a hearing aid on the bad ear because the implanted ear was so much better. You know, it was really hard to even wear a device on the ear that had yet to be implanted. And then when I got my second one implanted, I made sure every day, again, I was intentional to take off the first ear. So my left ear was done first. Every day I would take that off and I would talk on the phone and listen with the radio only to my right ears. I, for pretty much 6-7 months after implantation, did everything until my right ear matched my left ear. And now on the phone and radio, there's no difference. Like they're identical. There's so many times I get to work and I'm like, I only have one ear and I forgot, but it could be either one. Mm-hmm. So I don't notice any difference in sound between either of them.
It really pays to be an audiologist when this happens because you are doing everything by the books to make sure you had an optimal outcome.
Everything we wish all of our patients.
That's remarkable.
So in all seriousness, one of the things we've enjoyed in the conversations we've had with different professionals is how they're utilizing technology, social media, whatever it may be, to broaden their reach as a clinician and who they can impact and who can benefit from their knowledge and their skill set. And as I'm hearing you talk, the idea that runs through my head is you know how to do the process. And yes, it's your process and it's what worked for you. But the fact that you've had such success, that you've been able to get your second ear to be like your first ear, is there ever any thought of kind of creating almost a how-to manual that's not just an AR plan or kind of reinventing the wheel, but just like, hey, we know this can be complicated. Here's how I succeeded.
And that is kind of what I've been talking about, the ideas mm-hmm. around was writing a book and working on a program. Honestly, it's taken me a lot of courage in the last year and a half to understand that I do have a voice at the table and mm-hmm. expertise to bring as an audiologist and someone who's lived it. I spent 20 years seeing patients and not talking about my story and comparing myself. So now using myself has been an experiment for me and learning mm-hmm. and I'm comfortable with it. So I have been in the talks and actually one of the people who reached out to me as mentor and a close friend was Dr. Douglas Beck. And him and I have been talking with him, helping me write a rehabilitation book on my story and kind of what I did professionally and personally to rehabilitate my hearing during the last, like, you know, both before hearing aids and with cochlear implants and then what I've seen in my clinic, both successful. Because I've had a few cochlear implant clients now who've both been very similar to me and how they've mm-hmm. done. And I think it's a lot because they were seeing me and they were following what I was telling them to do. So sharing that story and then and trying to motivate more people to understand that they're part of it and that what they do also can have a huge impact. I believe that you have to continuously work on your auditory training for life once you have implants, but probably with hearing aids, it's the same. Like you always got to be just like going doing your steps every day and doing a healthy diet. It just becomes something that you make in your daily routine, like brushing your teeth that you're going to do for every day now for the rest of your life. I try to like, that's what I try to resonate through my office and with our patients with. So I'd love to bring that message to the public. So that's what I'm hoping will be a goal for 2025.
Yeah, I feel like there's so much opportunity to do that. And as you grow your reach, I can't imagine that not being something that would be successful in kind of attracting your own community of people who are on their own journey, but see value in the way you went about it and the success you've been able to achieve in how you've gone through the process.
Auditory training is something that's been so underemphasized that we focus so much on the actual devices that the auditory training, oral rehab is underutilized and hearing how much it's helped you and how much you stress its importance, I expect to be very helpful for people to hear.
I hope it is. And I think for audiologists out there and professionals and medical professionals, how I describe it to my team is that, you know, we fit someone with a hearing aid and they're doing okay. but what if we stretch our goals a little bit more? Like, what if we shoot higher for them to do better? Because just because we give a person a hearing aid and cochlear implant, they're doing better than they were doing before, that doesn't mean they've reached their potential. So why don't we stretch those goals a little higher and think a little bigger with all the people who are getting hearing care? And that's what true success looks like. So I think that's where it'd be great to have that shift in hearing healthcare, where people come in and they don't want to just get a device. They want to maximize their listening and do the best hearing they can. If we start talking like that, I think that's when we'll see true success start happening for people who wear hearing devices.
Are you finding with the patients that you speak with and have that sort of conversation with that they're willing to invest not just the time, but maybe in whatever costs may be associated in achieving that sort of outcome? Are you finding an openness to that?
So when last year I started having, I had events every month in my community where I invited my patients' community. And then like one of my events, for example, was an FM event. So we had 70 people in a room. We had pre-fit a few of our patients with FM systems, and they stood up and told the audience, you know, what they were experiencing. And then everybody wanted FM systems and they loved them. Just by hearing other people's success stories and being in the same room. And I think that's what we need in hearing.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Healthcare, because nobody ever hears really that they hear, I know patient testimonials online, but they never really get the true success stories, like to know somebody and hear about how it changed their life or how they heard better in the restaurant or how they're so much more satisfied now. So we've seen it in the clinic, and we've had people who will like the FM technology, and then we were doing auditory training apps before and they were willing to pay for it. It's that belief and that, you know, this is going to be better for you. And I think when you create a culture and a mindset that you can do better and you deserve better, then people are on board. But you have to believe it yourself too.
When watching your TED talk, you mentioned this couple that was celebrating their 35th wedding anniversary, and the wife got herself all ready and she comes home to tell her husband and she's met with silence. And eventually I think you concluded that he got hearing aids. And it's something that we have a lot in the office of, it's not just the patient coming in, it is their spouse. We say a lot that we are part audiologist, part marriage counselor, because we are often met with a patient that may or may not recognize their difficulty, but a spouse or a parent or a child that is struggling even more because they can't interact with the patient, with their loved one. How do you go about working not just with the patient, but with their accompanying family member when going through the whole process?
At our practice, we encourage everybody to bring a family member or friend. They're sent a video and they're obviously asked to bring one to the appointment. And we feel very strongly that when a family member or partner's there to absorb all the information, and then we include them in the conversation as it's appropriate. So obviously most of the time it's like that person's medical appointment, so we're getting all the information. And then at the time we let them share their story, because when they get to share their story, then I feel like it fills in a lot of billings, because sometimes that's the person's first time hearing what their partner or family think. Because usually it's like, you need to get hearing aids or you're not hearing. But if you can get that person to explain how they feel disconnected or you're missing the important moments, like add an emotional aspect to it, it resonates deeper with them. But I think as humans at home, we often just blame our family. So we point the finger and say, you have to get a hearing test because you can't hear me. Nobody's going to take direction that way. But it's like, if it's like, you know, I'm really worried that you don't hear me because what if I like have a fall or something happens and you won't be able to help me, then they're more likely urgent to realize their hearing loss is affecting important things in life. So I think in the clinic, we try to invoke the partners and the families to talk about it emotionally, how it's impacting their emotions and their feelings, because then that resonates more with the person with the hearing loss. Nobody wants to be told what to do.
Yeah. And it's oftentimes overlooked that from what we hear amongst a lot of conversation with patients is hearing aids almost become a derogatory term within the interaction of the person with hearing loss and those around them. Of like, you can't hear me. You need hearing aids. Get hearing aids. But it's not in a positive way. Yeah, it's this like, do this already, as opposed to, connection is breaking down, relationships are breaking down, which is what I heard from your talk, that audiologists and those with hearing loss need to focus on relationship and how important hearing and communication is to connection. And when that communication breaks down for whatever reason, which could be an underlying hearing loss, that connection is impaired. And then all of the downstream effects that that has in our lives. My mom also is an audiologist, and she would say all the time, she saved more marriages than a marriage counselor from.
Well, that's why we talk about it a lot. I think it should be blasted to the world. Your hearing loss affects the intimacy in your relationships. One thing my TED Talk originally started with, which we veered off on, was there is different types of intimacy. Like, we have intimate relationships with our children. We have, like, if my daughter's 14 and she's crying about her iPhone not working and I can't hear her because of my hearing loss, there is a break in our connection with me as her mother. And that's an intimate conversation versus if I'm out at the grocery store and I don't hear the teller, like, you know, that sucks. I wish I had heard. But I don't have the same horrible feeling as I do if I don't hear my child or my grandchild or my partner, you know, and I think we don't talk about that and shout that from the rooftops in audiology, that we help marriages, like we help keep families together. We need to do a more powerful way of spreading that message, because communication is very complex. There's different levels of communication. And you're talking to me about intimate communication, I think. And that's what we really do a good job of helping within families.
And you do the work you need to do for your hearing loss so you can take your daughter to see Taylor Swift.
Exactly. It was amazing, by the way. I never dreamed. I mean, she was my cochlear implant story is that when I came back from my activation with my first ear, she was 3 years old. And that was my first time hearing her voice. So I didn't hear her as a baby. So
really?
Like, mommy. And I'd never heard that she was like, so I'd just been activated and I'd never heard her voice. I'll never forget standing in the kitchen thinking, and my son was six. And I'm like, I've just heard my children's voices for the first time.
And what was that? What was the feeling in that for you?
It was surreal. I mean, I can't even explain. I don't have any videos of it. It was just at the time, I guess you're so worried getting a cochlear implant, if it's going to work and how it's going to work and the activation that you really... It's just, it's a very emotional when you start hearing sounds again after losing them. We don't talk about, like, for many people who get implants as adults, they've slowly lost their hearing, right? And or they've lost it quickly, but they've lost their hearing as an adult. So you're so aware of loss and you're living in loss, loss, loss. And then you get an implant and you're just like, I can hear. Like, it was amazing being activated.
It's interesting that you mentioned hearing your daughter's voice for the first time. We spoke with a mother who of a now 4-year-old who has bilateral cochlear implants. And right before the second surgery, her mother was grieving over the fact that her daughter was never going to hear her actual voice the same ever again, because it wasn't going to be acoustic anymore. It would now just be this electric voice. But after the surgery, all she could think about was that she could hear her voice, and the fact that it's in reverse and that you don't even think to the you're not going to hear her voice acoustically, but you're hearing her voice at all. It's putting the positive spin on it.
Exactly. And you do actually talk about the acoustical. Like, so I had normal hearing, obviously, at a certain point. I played all the musical instruments. And my hearing, even after I was activated, was as I remembered it growing up as a child. Like, my hearing sounded way more electrical and acoustical with the hearing aid than it ever did with an implant. I would never describe my hearing. Even now, like, this study I was in, they played every single musical instrument. I played alto, sax, flute. They sound exactly like I remember in band in high school. I always think, and that was my worry about getting the implant, was how different things were going to sound, but they didn't sound different. So I grew up playing Highland Dancing with the bagpipes, and I took bagpipe lessons. Couldn't hear bagpipes at all in my 20s and 30s. My daughter's a Highland dancer. I can hear every single tune in the bagpipe, and it sounds exactly like when I danced to it. So I believe there's still things about cochlear implants and how they sound that we don't know, because we only go by how could a person who doesn't have cochlear implants actually tell a person who has normal hearing, like, what it's like? You can't measure that, really.
We get asked all the time, what's it going to sound like? And it's, we don't know. We can't tell you what it's going to sound like.
Right now, I think there's lots of different variety in cochlear implants, and we all have different experiences. But for me, the bagpipes sound like they did when I was a child, and my daughter dances, and I'm in dance competitions, and it sounds exactly like I could tell you what song they're playing from behind. It's a bagpipe. My dog bark sounds like a dog bark that it did when I was a kid. So I still think we don't know everything about cochlear implants and how they work and stimulating the auditory system. I still think there's lots of science that have to be explored in that area.
Yeah, and I wonder how much auditory memory is involved in that, and that your brain is hearing this sound, and even if it is not exactly the same representation of it, but it's interpreting it as the same representation, or that's fascinating to me in the way it works, and how people who have musical ears can still be involved with their instruments and still play. And it doesn't matter that they have a cochlear implant and electrical hearing, they can still hear what they need to hear to play what they want to play.
And everyone's on their own timeline. That I have a patient that has, this is actually with hearing aids, not with CI, but music was just taking forever to sound good again. And finally got to the point like 8 months in where that was the last thing to come, but it came back for her. And for some people it's immediate and some people it takes much longer. And when people ask how long will it be until things sound normal, then again, will it ever really sound normal? But everybody's on their own timeline.
They are. We all have different perceptions. And the way we lose our hearing, the hearing loss, what's going on in the brain is different for everybody, which makes it exciting though, too, right? Knowing the potential that if people work at it, then they can be, that they can. I think that's always the most biggest of potential, is that you can improve with it. Because everybody I've talked to is cochlear implants, like we all hear things differently. And I find that fascinating.
And shifting gears a little bit, very open in speaking about kind of the positive aspects of your experience with hearing loss. You've also shared through social media some of the negative experiences that you've had and how it is to interact with a world that may not understand what it's like to have hearing loss or have, if you want to use the word disability or whatever it may be, that people can't see. Somebody sees you, they don't necessarily see your hearing loss. They don't necessarily see your processor or know what any of that means. That how is it to get in front of an audience, even if it's a social media audience, and share the not so good experiences of all of this?
That's been a journey. So I'm getting more comfortable with it. It's definitely something I've always been comfortable with, because some people wear like a badge of honor. For me, it was kind of like, I was like, I just, you know, struggling with my feelings with it, right? You never want to project your feelings onto somebody else. For me, people can be rude, obviously. People can be, they can just not understand. I mean, I've met audiologists and hearing professionals who are rude about my hearing. Some of the rudest ones I met were the ones who taught me. I still be in a group with medical professionals or go to the hospital, and the experience is horrible for me when they say I have hearing loss. But what I've learned over time, and I tell myself, this is about them and what they don't understand. And this is their problem, not my problem. And it wasn't until I started realizing that I can't control how people perceive me. And I can't necessarily always change what they think. But, you know, it's really a them problem, not a me problem. And the more I tell myself that, usually I do fine with it. It's just once in a while, you know, which happened this summer when I was traveling, it pushed my buttons too much. And I just completely fell apart and like got really, really upset, because I felt like, just because you can't see it, you're treating me differently, but I should not have to wear anything on my body to label myself as disabled. Like, I don't believe we live in 2024. I don't think anybody should have to do that.
Yeah, right? It's an important message to share, because some people are obnoxious and intentionally choose ignorance, and some people are not willing to do the work to learn about how can you make communication more effectively? But also some people just don't know. And we see it with our patients all the time, that family members don't understand. But I was talking to you from the other room while you were washing dishes in the kitchen with the TV on, and I was on the phone, and why couldn't you hear me? That we all can do things to put people in a better position to listen and understand, independent of any hearing loss. So sharing that, I think, brings awareness to, hey, this is real for a lot of people. These are the experiences that a lot of people face, and things can be done better out there.
I think they can be done a lot better. I think there's definitely minority groups who like have strong viewpoints. But if we look as the group as a whole, like, you know, 1.5 billion people with hearing loss on the planet, is that, you know, the solutions have to be for everybody. Like, we can't expect everybody to go around. And I've had people say, no, you don't show your hearing aids. Of course, I wear my hair in a ponytail all the time. I'm on an interview now, but if you're at home or in the grocery store, my hair's in a ponytail and you can see my implants. It's like anybody who suffers from depression or mental health anxiety, they don't have to wear labels around saying, I have depression, I have anxiety, right? I ruptured my Achilles tendon 2 years ago. I didn't have to wear a label, foot out of order, right? Believe in hearing that we should. And I think we need solutions that just educate the public that I believe hearing loss is a common medical condition and it's very treatable. And there's different groups, like there is every other type of, you know, medical condition, but in the same time, since it's so common and our treatments are quite effective, and we need people to understand that. It's not like it was in the 1980s and 30s and 40s. We can do a lot with hearing loss today. It's just if we get more people treated earlier.
Absolutely.
And how did the process go to doing a TED Talk? I'm very curious about the TED Talk.
So I wanted to do a TED Talk actually after I got my implants, and about 2 years afterwards, I'm like, okay, I want to tell my story. And then you're asking the process of getting to the TED Talk. So then I joined a group online that had a bunch of TED Talk speakers on it. It was amazing, the supportive community of people who were applying. And then I was working with a coach and submitting applications. I always knew I wanted to talk about relationships and hearing loss and tell this story. But then speaking on a TED Talk is very different than doing any other talk, because you only got like 10 or 12 minutes. And there's different ways to do it. So some of them can be very broad. Some people get up and tell all their story. I wanted mine to be more like a story, but with a little bit of me, but then a lot about everything else. Like, so people, because I believe that if people knew how common hearing loss was, they'd be shocked. Like, people just think hearing loss is only happening to older people. They don't realize that it's in all age groups, and it's definitely in a lot of adults. Like, there's a lot of adults with untreated hearing loss. So I applied for the TED Talk and got accepted. You had to go through an interview process, so 2 interviews to get accepted with Boston College. And with ours, I had 3 weeks to prepare the talk.
Oh, wow.
Some people have 4 and 5 and 6 months. So my group who spoke in Boston, we all found out, I think it was the first, we found out I was March break. So I found out mid-March that I was speaking April 6th. So did the group of us. So, you know, you've already had things booked in life. So then I was like, okay, we had to write the talk, get the talk, memorize the talk, submit it back to the committee. They have to approve it with references and then book the flights to Boston. I was a hot mess.
Sounds intense. Sounds very intense.
And then the day we got there, you're speaking, like, then they had the little red circle, but I had worn high heels. But they're like, okay, you can't step off the circle. And the audience is completely black. You can't see anybody. You don't even know where the cameras are. And you just in the circle, and I'm standing there, and it's like, it was definitely an interesting.
It's disconcerting.
No teleprompter, you're just speaking, you have to memorize. So you just stand in a black audience on a little red circle for 10 minutes. That was where mine was done, you know? So it was kind of like, I was like, okay, I can do this. So, and then I had to wait until it got released. It took about 7-8 months for it to get released. So the rest, it was picked as an editor's pick. Everybody else was released and mine wasn't released. And I was like, oh, they must not have liked it. And then of course, a couple of weeks later, the email comes and it was an editor's pick. We'll release it when we feel is a good time. So I did my TED Talk in April, but it was released in November.
So in doing something like that, in your head, do you have a metric for success of like, oh, I want to see X number of downloads, or is the doing it the success?
It was a goal since I was 40. It was doing it. It was getting the courage to tell my story and tell my story, but not only be about me. Mine was like, obviously, what I've done, but then to talk about the shame and the self-confidence and self-esteem, how it impacted me, but then also my patients and how wonderful audiology is. And we have all these people that need to be treated, and this increasing. It was more to do it and see, can we write a story that will resonate with people? I wasn't really thinking views or anything at the time, and that never has been my thing. I've always said that on social media, and that if I talked more a lot about cochlear implants, I probably would like draw a lot more attention. As my mission in life has always been to get people to start treatment earlier. Like, I want people to start treatment in their 40s and 50s and 60s, even with a little bit of hearing, like there's no such thing as a little bit of hearing loss, like minimal hearing loss, just when they start noticing. I want people doing auditory training. I want people learning that when they need a remote mic or FM system to assist, that they have it. That's always been my passion since day one. So I wanted my talk to have a little bit of that in it too. And then all this relationship aspect, because I think that relationships are everything when it comes to your hearing.
I think that sums it up.
Like, it wasn't views, it was just more. Yeah, because most of my patients don't even know I've done it, right?
Put that on your front door.
I'm still in shock. The day it came out, I wasn't expecting, because I didn't know. Actually, Juliet, her talk on the T-coil, she texted me. She was the first person who 24 hours later messaged me and said, hey, did you know your TED Talk went up yesterday? I had no idea. But it was fun. It was a lot of fun. I would love to do another one on social isolation and loneliness, because that's another topic. There was times in my hearing loss journey, and I see with patients, where I think the loneliness that we suffer from hearing loss, like we talk about social isolation with hearing loss, which no one walks in your clinic ever and says, I'm socially isolated. Like, we just don't talk like that. So that word gets thrown around a lot, where to me, it's the loneliness that affects our mental health with hearing. Because, you know, when you're in a group and you can't hear at the table, you feel very lonely. When you're going to a place, and also obviously the worry and loneliness that come with hearing loss. You know, if I was ever to do another TED Talk, that would be my dream, is to talk about loneliness and like how it's kind of isolating in itself. And you can be with everybody, but you don't feel connected with everybody.
There is certainly an audience out there for that.
But it's fun. It's like a challenge, right, to do the talk and get through the process. And
absolutely.
It resonates with people, because I think today with like this online, it's the more people we resonate, then hopefully it helps more people.
So for the audiologists out there listening, what is something you think they should know when they're looking at their patients?
I talk a lot about, I think they need to look long-term. So my audiologist taught me that our job as audiologists is from cradle to grave. And I mean with the same person, not with people. When that person comes to us at the age 45 or 50, if we're always looking at this person and thinking long-term, like, you know, I'm doing this today, but this is what they're going to need 6 months, a year from me now, 4 years, 10 years from me. This person's a person who I'm going to be helping for the next 20 years of their life. And they're going to go through maybe divorce. They're going to maybe develop arthritis. They might develop cancer. And I'm going to be their person, their dentist, their medical doctor, their physician for this 20-year journey. And I'm going to stretch my goals with them beyond just a real ear measure and a hearing test. And I'm going to think long-term about everything they need. That's my journey. That's my dream for audiology, because I think that's what would make us shine, is when we go and elevate ourselves and just treatment plan and see patients in the long run for many years to come, versus just fitting a hearing aid and doing a test measure and a test box and call it a day.
So much in life is just better when you're thinking long game, whether it's professionally, whether it's interacting with your patients, whether it's personal relationships, that if we as clinicians think long game, don't just think fit the set of hearing aids or recommend the cochlear implant, that it's the process, it's the work involved that brings the fulfillment and the success, then I think there's some great opportunity in that, not just checking a box of I ran this test and this measurement, and well, if I did this, then I followed a best practice, so I'm all done. That's nonsense.
I mean, best practices are great, but I mean, I think as a doctor in profession, we have to aim a lot higher. We're really down there.
Absolutely. What else do you want people to know about what it's like navigating the world with hearing loss, and what individuals can do who are interacting with people who have hearing loss, and what people who experience hearing loss themselves can do to have an easier time navigating the world? What kind of words of wisdom would you give for both sides of that equation?
I think the first is to find professional support community that gives you good advice. So we were just talking about the first thing for both the person with the hearing loss and their family, to find advice where they're thinking long-term about your care and they're looking at you holistically in all areas of your life, then you know you're in a good place. Because you have to start at the beginning with good care that's looking at all of it. For the person with the hearing loss, it's them putting in the work and understand that they need to learn about their own hearing. And also they need to work with their hearing professionals and ask them what they need to do, what more they should be learning. So they have to be active participants in their hearing journey too. Right. So they need to be learning that, what do I do when I go travel with devices? You can't just put hearing aids on and go on an airplane now. You got to make sure you pack your chargers in your carry-on bag, because if you're like me and they lose your luggage, and then it's, you can't get it for a week and you can't charge your devices at your location. So they need to learn strategies, obviously, to live with the devices, which I think now, because of social media and online tools, are much more accessible. There's lots of Facebook groups. There's positive Facebook groups on hearing loss that you got to look for. There's some negative ones. So I think you have to be very careful when you're looking for care, that a professional should always be the first. And I think the online community groups can be good if they're positive. And then for the family member, I think that they should attend the appointments and they should be involved in the process. So they need to be learning too. So when both people are learning together and growing together, that's where real success comes in. But the family needs to learn about what that person needs, because one person might need you to look at them and another person might need you to turn the music down. Like in my family, when we're there and, you know, my sister has a hearing loss and me, we actually both have very different requirements, right? So when we go into like our family gatherings or family, what I need to hear better is actually different than her, even though we both have cochlear implants. So our family has to learn what I need. I also have to learn to tell them what I need. So if I need help from them, I'll give them heads up. Like, it's really noisy in here. Can you ask the hostess to turn the music down for me? And they will. So it's a two-way street communication. So the family member has to be on that journey too.
It's definitely an interactive, a joint process between the person with the hearing loss, the family members, the audiologist, and it sounds like you have a good read on kind of how it is ideal or for success. And it sounds like you've worked to achieve that. You work with family to achieve that, and now you're translating it over to your patients, which is great.
I've seen the failures too, right? I mean, we see the bad, and I've seen my family.
And you learn from it.
As we've seen all of it. It's like a triangle, though. It's like you said, it's the professional, the family, and the person, and they all need to be working together to make that successful for whatever that is for that person.
And success can really be for everybody. It's patient hears better, the family member has better relationships and connection, and the professional has the reward of being a part of that. So everybody stands to benefit from more positive, more educated interactions where everybody gets what they need.
Yes.
So why don't you tell everybody where they can find you, where they can find your TED Talk, where they can find you, whether to see you as their clinician or otherwise on social media?
So I'm in Sarnia, Ontario with Blue Water Hearing and Balance. So that's my clinic. It's on the Michigan border. You can find me on social media under Nashley Brogan AUD on Instagram and Facebook. We are getting ready to launch a YouTube channel. So I'll be doing weekly like tips and tricks for hearing on YouTube very shortly. And I'm also speaking on stages. So I do post a lot of that too on social media. So you can follow me where I'm speaking both professionally as an audiologist. I'll be speaking in March and at a couple of professional events, association events coming this winter and spring. And I also will be doing some personal events for patients around North America that I've been invited to different cities to speak to patients. So I'll be posting that on my social media accounts too.
Fantastic. Well, we look forward to seeing the work that you're up to in the months ahead. Thank you for all that you do in the world of hearing loss in the community for audiology, for patients, and sharing your story in a way that can help people. It's commendable. And it's one of the really nice things in social media, how you can help people that you've never met. You can help people on the other side of the world, kind of diving into that world. Well, well done.
Thank you. Thank you. One thing though, I forgot about my TED Talk. My TED Talk is on the TEDx channel on YouTube. So if you go Nashley Brogan, when you go to YouTube, TEDx, that's where my TED Talk is, right? Because all TED Talks are held under the TEDx channel on YouTube.
And we'll put a link to that in the descriptor on this podcast. So
this has been wonderful. Like, thank
everything
you so
will
much.
Be there.
Thank you for
it's been amazing.
Being here, it's you provide a lot of insight coming from the audiologist role and the patient role. So combining those things is insightful for patients and audiologists alike.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. Well, Dr. Nashley Brogan, thank you so much for taking your time and being a guest on the Hear Us Out podcast. All right.